Hello, this is The Game podcast from The Times and I'm Natalie Sawyer. Joining Gregor Robertson and I today, it is The Times chief football writer Henry Winter. Henry, great to have you on board. How are you keeping since we last spoke to you?
Good, absolutely good. I'm looking forward to the games returning, trying to stay in shape, looking forward to getting back.
Yes, getting back to normal business as much as normal can be. Speaking of which, I know you've been speaking to a Premier League star today. What can you tell us about that?
Mark Noble. I mean, he's great, Mark. I mean, he's just such a voice of sanity in a time when probably the world needs leaders. He's involved with the Premier League captains. They've got this WhatsApp group and they've been contacting each other for the last sort of 10 so weeks in lockdown on how they can generate money for the NHS. They had the Players Together initiative, and as part of that they've got shirts for heroes, so each one has provided a signed shirt and they're now you can bid for them for a fiver a pop on eBay. And I just had a look on there and Virgil is easily the most sought after of the 500 Premier League players. I think he was about, there've been about 800 separate bids for his shirt. Wow. And then obviously Mo Salah, Marcus Rashford, Sergio Aguero, and Mark himself. It's good to see. I mean, Gregor knows this well, but it's good to see the players contributing so substantially, despite what some politicians may think.
Yeah, absolutely, Gregor. In that sense, you're not surprised when you hear what they're doing.
No. I mean, we've had conversations over the last 10 weeks or so, as Henry said, with some of them, and. Yeah, they have. You know, I had a chat with Wes Morgan, and he was kind of saying that his ears were on fire because he'd had a headset and on so many Zoom calls and conference calls with the clubs and with the captains, and you know, he was doing a lot of things that you wouldn't expect of a captain of a football team in these times. But I think the captains have represented their clubs very well.
And how are you doing, Gregor? Come on, tell me about your running. Surely what is it, under 21? We've got to be getting under 21 minutes now.
I was under 21 already. I was, I was 20, 32, yeah. I've still not beaten it, I'm sorry.
Oh,
I'm letting everyone. I shouldn't have raised this. It's like the push-up challenge all over again, isn't it?
It's pressure on me. Maybe we should just stick to margaritas.
Yeah, I'll do that. I could always do that, yeah. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for asking. Yes, very, good. Very well. Coming up, we're going to talk about Jack Grealish, who also has been chatting to Henry this week. But first, it's time for this.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The FIFA president Gianni Infantino says any footballers protesting against police brutality of black people in America deserve applause, not punishment. The FIFA statement comes in a week which has seen widespread demonstrations in the US and UK since the death of George Floyd in police custody in Minnesota on the 25th of May. The death has sent shockwaves around the world, and Infantino is in no doubt about FIFA's stance on any on-field protests. He said, "For the avoidance of doubt, in a FIFA competition, the recent demonstrations of players in Bundesliga matches would deserve an applause and not a punishment. We all must say no to racism and any form of discrimination. We all must say no to violence, any form of violence." Well, FIFA rules forbid players to display political, religious or personal messages, but they've now urged competition organisers to take a common sense approach to the protests and consider the context when making decisions. The German FA have said they will take no further action against Jadon Sancho, Ashraf Hakimi, Marcus Thuram and Weston McKennie for their individual protests in the Bundesliga. Sancho and Hakimi both revealed T-shirts with Justice for George messages during Dortmund's win at Paderborn. Thuram took a knee after scoring for Borussia Mönchengladbach, and Schalke's American midfielder McKennie wore a Justice for George armband. Sancho was booked after displaying the message, but his yellow card will not be rescinded because it was for removing his shirt rather than for the message itself. Henry, when you hear that message from Gianni Infantino, from FIFA, are you happy to hear that sort of response?
Well, absolutely. And I think it shows a slight new mood at FIFA, which has not always been the most principled of organisations. I think we could have seen it sort of 10, 20 years ago. I think we could have seen it during international matches, whether under UEFA's or FIFA's jurisdiction, when England's players have been racially abused and FIFA hasn't done anything, or UEFA's come out and imposed a sort of, you know, a tiny fine, you know, despite Emil Heskey being racially abused, despite Ashley Cole being racially abused. And more recently, you know, we saw it with Tyrone Mings, Raheem Sterling, Marcus Rashford and Callum Hudson-Odoi being racially abused. So I think, you know, the governors of the game have, you know, they've got a little bit of guilt, a lot of guilt. And I think it's good that they've now addressed that and they are stronger. And they've realised that protesting against racism, this is not a political issue. This is a humanitarian. This is human. This is players doing the right thing. This is a societal problem, and football should actually be leading the fight against it. And many of the players, and Gregor knows this very well, many of the players are very socially responsible, very socially aware. They've lived through things that myself and Gianni Infantino could never have imagined growing up, the racist abuse that they would have endured as young players. And I think it's brilliant to see Jadon Sancho showing his support. I think it's fantastic to see, you know, if we go into a French context, Marcus Thuram, the son of the great Lilian Thuram, who was a long-time campaigner against racism, taking the knee in a Bundesliga match. I think it's fantastic, but it's not before time. And what we cannot have in this is FIFA, UEFA, the FA making their point, all the clubs making their point about Black Lives Matter, but then moving on. This has got to be day after day. This has got to be week after week, year after year, because anyone who covers football matches just knows the problem. Anyone, you know, the black people who are protesting, rightly protesting, they understand the problem. So football can't just sort of suddenly say, there's a problem, it's outrageous, and then move on to going back to arguing simply about VAR. This has got to be for good forever, not simply for a week.
Oh, I totally agree with everything you've said, Henry. There will be some, though, that will not appreciate players having messages on their shirts, for example. They will say that the pitch should remain neutral. Where would you stand on that, Henry?
Well, I'd think that they can go back to the Dark Ages if they want. they can stay with their small-minded, blinkered views. I think that people like them, when they've said that in the past, you know, 20, 30 years ago, maybe the football thought, well, actually, listen, this, you know, racism will go away. But clearly it hasn't. And that's why their views are, I mean, no one really takes those views seriously. I mean, when you see things like that on social media, you know, I mean, I don't think people take them seriously, because you've only got to look with your own eyes about what is happening to realise that, if anything, things have worsened. So their attitudes are even more outdated.
Yeah, absolutely. Gregor, as we've heard there, Gianni Infantino has said that players shouldn't be punished for displaying any sort of messages. Is football doing enough then by allowing them to do that?
Well, as Henry says, it's a step forward. I have to be honest and think that kind of the sort of critical mass of anger that's felt at the moment around the world and around this issue, you know, it's blown up to something enormous. I feel that they really couldn't have taken any other position at the moment. So as Henry said, what is important is when this passes, is that there's the same approach and attitude to racism expressed by FIFA and by football clubs and by governing bodies towards any racism, and that continues in the future. That is what is key, because, as I say, I think there was no other position to take. I think what is really encouraging is so many players, I think, they don't care now. You know, even if FIFA had said no, you can't do this, I don't think it would have made the blindest bit of difference. This is players are engaged, as Henry said, and more politically engaged, I think, than certainly during my time as a player. And this matters to them. So I think, FIFA, there was no other position FIFA could have taken. What is key is that we remember this, actually.
Yes, absolutely. But as I was saying, Sancho's yellow card won't be rescinded because it was given out for removing his shirt. So, Henry, in that sense, should players still be booked? Even though, actually, what Jadon Sancho was doing was to reveal a very strong and important message.
Do you know, the way football is going and the way the players, whether you want to call it militancy or I would call it actually taking responsibility of a world crisis, I think we're going to actually see messages being stitched into shirts. I think that the players are now so powerful. I think the clubs have realised they've actually got to take a stance as well. So actually, what is that then going to do if you've got anti-racism messages being stitched into the fabric of shirts? That would make it even more of a mockery of players being booked. I think the key word, and Gregor touched on this, the key word is that the governing body's attitude and the FA's stance about common sense. And I hope that is now applied to referees taking common sense approach. I mean, before matches, the players are checked for jewellery, they're checked for their studs. Obviously, it's difficult in the age of players coming back into a pandemic and how much a referee can actually check. But, a referee can easily go into a dressing room or in the tunnel when the players are going out and say, right, just lift your shirt just to see what shirt what you've got underneath. But no one can object to what Jadon Sancho did. If anything, Jadon Sancho should be applauded, not criticised or fined.
Kevin Prince-Boateng has called on football to do more in the fight against racism. Boateng, who walked off the pitch in 2013 after suffering racist abuse whilst playing for AC Milan, believes some players are scared to protest for fear of repercussions. This is what he said. I can understand because it is an uncomfortable position. Many people think if I share, repost or say something wrong, I will lose my sponsorship. They have to be comfortable. This is something bigger than a sponsor or anything like that. In the moment, if you say the wrong words, but you mean the right thing, you will never do wrong when you try to help the human race. Well, the anti-racism charity Kick It Out have urged black players to take a knee if they wish to demonstrate when the Premier League restarts, echoing the protests made famous by former San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick in 2016. Kaepernick has never played in the NFL again since that 2016 season. So, Gregor, when you hear what's happened to someone like Colin Kaepernick, can you understand how some players may well be nervous about actually protesting?
Yes, I mean, I think the reality is that some players are the truth is some players will be kind of in self-preservation mode, and that some of that does come down to money. Some players, there's different characters in football. Some might regard it as weak if you're not someone who speaks out or if you fail to use your platform. But the reality is there are very different characters within the game. And you can understand. I think, even it's interesting this week, Mesut Ozil losing the contract with Adidas, and some people raised the question of whether that had anything to do with him raising the plight of Uyghur Muslims in China in December, I think it was. There can be repercussions, and Colin Kaepernick is the prime example of that. These decisions have to be from governing bodies and football clubs, but even then, you stray into the territory of sounding like corporate messaging and a PR exercise almost. When football clubs and governing bodies are still shirking the tough decisions, whether that's in terms of football, how many black managers football has, how many people in positions of power and directors, administrative roles there are that are of BME. These are the real sort of structural, systemic issues that that are racism in society, and football's no different. So I can understand why footballers and individuals, you know, that it's their own personal decision, but football clubs are really the ones who have to take the lead, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that is it, isn't it, Henry? We're seeing some individuals now coming out and making their stance, but do the authorities need to do more? Do the Premier League need to come out with a blanket support for Black Lives Matters in the same way that it has with Kick It Out?
I think it's being driven by the players, and I think that's fantastic. I think that is, you know, they've rightly had enough. I was surprised in England's last international, the game in Bulgaria, the Sofia game, when they were racially abused by a group of Bulgarian fans, that they didn't walk off. And I was slightly disappointed they didn't. I've been talking to some of the players beforehand because of the abuse they'd had in, you know, in recent games in different countries. And they said, at some point, you're going to have to walk off, without sounding like a broken record. They have to take action. I think increasingly they are. And when England next are out on the road, and the next time they get racially abused, probably in Eastern Europe, sadly, it's a fact of life, I think they will walk off. Mm-hmm. And so I think the players are actually driving this. I think we've got a very socially aware group of enfranchised, emboldened players, led, in inverted commas, because it's a collective, but led, or certainly the tone set by Raheem Sterling with his Instagram message, it was a couple of years ago, which made our industry wake up to an extent, which challenged a lot of fans. I think if you talk to Jadon Sancho, Callum Hudson-Odoi, Marcus Rashford, you know, these are very strong individuals. So I take the point about governing bodies. I take your point about clubs and brands. But I think they're following the players, because players now are so powerful because of, you know, I mean, Marcus Rashford's got, what, about 20 million people following on social media. He's got a huge reach. You've seen with the work that he's done during the lockdown with the, you know, feeding, you know, hundreds of thousands of people through his charity and through his, you know, pushing this on social media. Players are where the power lies now. And I think what is going to be interesting moving forward, and maybe this is one of the reasons why FIFA have acted, is that maybe one or two of the players will look towards the next World Cup, look at Qatar, look at certain things that have gone on in Qatar, and say, actually, we've got an issue with playing here. So, I mean, the players where the power lies at the moment.
Mm. Just to touch on what you said then about the England team, for example, do you think they are so together now that they would all collectively walk off if needed?
Probably a question you should actually pose to Gregor, but from my understanding, looking at it from the press box of the England team and the players' dynamic, I thought it was very interesting that Harry Kane stood up and he went over to the officials in Sofia when the players got racially abused. I mean, Tyrone Mings was racially abused in the warm-up. UEFA should have acted there. When it happened in the first half, Harry Kane took responsibility. And this was something that Lewis Hamilton, who doesn't get, I'm not a Formula One fan, but looking at him as a leader, as a role model, Lewis Hamilton speaks so much sense, and actually too few people really listen to him. I think they're listening to him now. And what he did with his, I think it was his Instagram message on the back of the killing of George Floyd, is that actually white drivers have got to call this out as well. And I think then sort of seven or eight of them did respond and said, listen, you know, Black Lives Matter. But I think what we're seeing in football is it's far more of a collective in the dressing room, and white voices are being heard, as well as obviously the rightly strident and angered black voices.
Mm. Gregor, do you agree with that then, that it is a more united front when it comes to all these issues that we're discussing?
Yeah, I mean, look, Henry's absolutely right. The players are that kind of balance, the dynamic now has changed. That players are, I do have so much more power. And so it's both highly encouraging, but also, as my point really was, I didn't articulate it very well, it's slightly sad that it falls upon individuals like that and they're not always protected, or they're football clubs, by the football clubs or the governing bodies. So yes, this is great, and these guys, a lot of young English footballers as well, I would imagine, when the Premier League starts, if this is still a burning issue, which I would see it will be, they will take a stand in some way. And that's great, but it's also, we need to see those structural and systemic issues, that racism, throughout society and football and governing bodies, that is the thing that has to change for it not to fall upon individuals.
Don't you think actually that process, and I completely agree with you, but that process in terms of enlightening the sporting bodies will actually happen when more black players decide, okay, they can go into coaching, although many feel there's a glass ceiling, or they can go into the media or property businesses because they've made money, whatever. But actually some of them will actually want to go and say, right, I'm going to turn UEFA around from within. I'm going to try and turn FIFA around from within and bring my expertise, my experiences, the horrific things that, you know, I've endured on my journey to the top, and also well-being at the top, and bring that experience. Sadly, I think some of them will say, actually, we can't see them changing. But actually, if you got a Raheem Sterling into the Exco at FIFA or UEFA or onto the board of the FA, actually, I think that's where you really begin to see proper structural change.
Well, Boateng has also hit out at the current fines and sanctions for racist behaviour from football supporters. He said, "For me, it's a joke. At the beginning, I thought it could work, but people feel too comfortable. They can sit there and shout the N-word at us. The policeman felt comfortable kneeling on Floyd's neck. That's the problem. They feel comfortable because there are no consequences. What is the consequence?" he asks. "You cannot go to the stadium anymore. Fine, no problem. A fine of $35,000 for a club? What is that? That's why people are comfortable." And Henry, I know you touched on the issue with UEFA's fines and the way that they deal with racist behaviour from some of the countries that we've seen of late. Is a starting point for football to tackle racism, to take a stronger stance? Is that where we need to try and make a positive change, that UEFA and FIFA need to come down harder?
I think the starting point is more societal. It's to do with education. I think that, you know, UEFA and FIFA, they're not going to fight racism with hashtags. They're not going to fight it with small fines. They might fine it to address it to an extent with maybe banning countries from organize from their events. But I think ultimately this has to be addressed in schools. I mean, as everyone says, you know, a kid isn't born racist. It's environment, it's maybe education, maybe one or two parental influences, bad influences around them. Let's address it in schools first. I mean, John Barnes gets a little bit of criticism over some of the stances he takes, but when I wrote a book with him sort of 20 to 30 years ago, you know, this was on the back of the abuse, the racist abuse that he got at Goodison and at other places. And he very calmly said, the way to address it is education, education, education. And I think that is key. So, look, I agree with you. I think UEFA and FIFA can do more. But I think ultimately it's society's got to get a grip of this first.
And I know you mentioned Lilian Thuram. You've also been writing this week about meeting Lilian Thuram, who is now helping in the fight against racism. There are a lot of figures who are doing what they can to try and re-educate.
You know, Lilian Thuram is a remarkable individual. And 12 years ago, I had the opportunity to go to an exhibition at the World Museum in Liverpool. And it was an exhibition on slavery. And Lilian Thuram, I think he was doing something with the sort of PFA or Kick It Out. And I got the opportunity to sit down and talk to him. And his girlfriend at the time, who was a remarkable television presenter, and she was totally emotionally engaged in the conversation. And this wasn't simply a conversation about racism now. This was going back to the Treaty of Berlin, whatever, 200 odd years ago, and how the colonies in Africa were divided up. Lilian Thuram spoke so powerfully about it, and he had the opportunity to go and advise the French government. And I like that in the French system, that actually they are intelligent enough and enlightened enough to go and invite a recently retired player and draw on his expertise. I would love to do that. Look, I can't imagine Boris Johnson ringing up Raheem Sterling and saying, "Can you come and sort of explain to me what it's like trying to settle in this country in West London with only one parent and the problems you've got, you know, where that you grew up in 20 miles away from Eton?" I think that would be sort of slightly difficult. But actually, it's kind of what we need, coming back to this using players, you know, players' expertise. So, yeah, look, Lilian Thuram is a remarkable individual, very impressive on the field. Obviously, he's a World Cup winner off the field as well. And I think his son is clearly showing that as well, Marcus.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Let's finish by talking about Jack Grealish. As Henry, you've been speaking to him for the Times this week. After a superb season, Grealish made the front pages during lockdown, having been partying at a friend's house and then pictured standing outside his damaged car. Henry, it obviously caused a lot of controversy, those pictures that we saw during lockdown. Do you think he's put that incident behind him now?
I'm not sure fans will let him put it behind him. No. I think it takes a little bit of time to address it. Look, he's done all the right things since making that bad mistake. He's been doing his work for the NHS. He's been raising money. So, you know, there's damage to him reputationally, he knows he's got to go and prove and improve and work harder. He's been talking, obviously, to his manager, Dean Smith, who tragically his father passed away. You know, he'd been in a care home struggling with dementia. So I think that brought it home even more to Jack Grealish about, you know, he's got responsibilities. He's the captain. Dean Smith made him captain. He is a role model. He admits that. I mean, I hope he has learnt. You know, he's 24, and if he spoke so passionately about obviously playing for Aston Villa, obviously being a sort of son of the Holt End and wanting to represent Villa fans properly and, you know, get them out of this relegation situation. But also he spoke very passionately about wanting to play for England one day. Now, as everyone knows about Gareth Southgate, he likes, in quotes, good citizens. He wants people who will represent the shirt, the country, the team well. You know, he doesn't want them to hear them. But I mean, it'd be interesting to see what happens to Kyle Walker and Kieran Trippier after their recent issues, whether Jack Grealish will then be given a chance. So, look, he's such a talent. He's 24. He's been playing superbly at the start of the season. The goal against Manchester United, I think Jamie Carragher had him in his team of the first two-thirds of the season, you know, in a midfield with Jordan Henderson and Kevin De Bruyne. So, that, you know, that's pretty impressive. So, look, the talent's there. He's just got to focus a little bit more and not make daft decisions.
Yeah, I mean, Gregor, as Henry's just pointed out, it was a daft decision that he made, but can he make amends on the pitch?
Yeah, well, I don't think he has to make amends on the pitch for where Villa fans are concerned. And I think, as Henry says, probably he is looking at a lot of supporters. There was a lot of anger at that time and a lot of kind of, you know, it was a difficult time for the country. It still is, but that was a kind of peak moment where there was a lot of alarm.
You could understand the anger, though, couldn't you?
Yes, you could. It was a silly decision, especially after he'd just come out and told everyone else to stay indoors. You know, so yeah, but he's a young lad, and he's made a mistake, and he's kind of shown that he's sorry. And as Henry says, he's been magnificent this season. I think when it comes to England, I think the issue with Gareth Southgate is that it's the same with Madison as well. I think as Henry says, he likes good citizens. He likes players who are kind of, he feels he can rely upon, and I think there probably has been a little question mark over both of those players' heads. And so the likelihood of them both playing in the same England team, I would say, is pretty slim. I'd also say that part of that is because who plays behind them is also a big issue for England in midfield. So, you know, if you're playing one defensive midfielder and allowing those two guys to go and roam free, you're going pretty gung-ho. So, but look, he gets back to playing football this season, and I'm sure he'll have a massive role of filler to stay up.
Well, Grealish also discussed their preparations for recommencing the Premier League behind closed doors, which includes attempting to reduce the amount of swearing on the pitch, the potential use of artificial crowd noise that Grealish says he would be fine with, but also about how much he will miss the crowd, home and away. He says, I love it when people are on my back and targeting me. I always remember when I was a kid, and I'm not saying I am anywhere near his level, but Cristiano Ronaldo used to come to Villa and the fans used to absolutely cane him. It used to make me and my dad laugh. Obviously, I'd never cane him because I used to look up to him. He used to thrive off it, Grealish says, and that is what I try to do. I try to thrive off the hatred from the fans. When it comes to the home games, I get a lot of love off the Villa fans. I also thrive off that. So it will be different having no fans there. Gregor, we know that obviously with the Premier League coming back, there will be no fans. It will all be played behind closed doors. So how much can fan abuse actually spur you on?
I think it can, yeah. I think it slightly depends on the character, but of the player. I think certainly can. I mean, how many players say that in half of their motivation is proving people wrong? So, I mean, we've all watched the Michael Jordan documentary. He used to make up instances of people, other players or the team manager or anyone. He'd sort of made up a slight in his head and just to kind of fire him up a little bit more. And I think undoubtedly for a certain character, proving people wrong or proving how good you are is a huge motivational tool. Obviously, there won't be fans in the stadium to do that just now, but that certainly is something that I think someone like Jack Grealish, who you could tell likes to be the centre of attention, he likes to have the ball all the time, he likes to be Villa's main man. I would imagine that would be something he's got no problem with at all.
But having said that, though, he wants to be the man, and he thrives off the love that he gets from the Villa fans. He also enjoys the hatred, Henry, that he gets from opposition fans. Can he then perform in a game where there are no fans, do you think?
Oh, I'm sure he can. I mean, he's got such a talent, and he also knows what a situation that Aston Villa are in. And that they need him. There will be an obligation on him, I think, even more after his little lockdown mishap. So I don't think he'll... Obviously, you know, he takes inspiration from the when the fans are there. But absolutely, I think he'll... And I think he did make the point as well, if I remember rightly, he said, well, OK, so there might not be fans there, but I know people are not just going to be watching all over the country on television, they were going to be watching all over the world. So I think he knows very much that, you know, he every touch that he has will be scrutinised. He also knows that Gareth Southgate won't be in the ground, but he will be watching from home.
Well, Grealish also discussed whether the lack of crowds could improve some players. He says, I've played with a few players in my time who were unbelievable in training, the best I have ever played with, but couldn't really cut it on a match day. There are definitely some players out there who will thrive off the fact there are no fans. But saying that, once the Premier League is back on TV, everyone, as Henry, you've just alluded to there, in the world will be watching. Gregor, can you understand what Jack Grealish is saying there? That actually some players do fare better in training than on the pitch and perhaps vice versa?
Absolutely, yeah. There have always been players throughout my career, certainly, who you watched in training Monday to Friday and thought what an incredible player they were, and then they either couldn't get in the team or they just, when they did, then they got a chance, they just didn't perform in the same way. And some of that's to do with the kind of maybe not having a role in the team, but other players certainly have issues with kind of the pressure or hearing any slights from the crowd or anything like that. There was one player in particular, and I don't feel bad about naming him now because I saw he did an interview about this recently, a guy called Paolo Vernazza, who he began at Arsenal and he played a few games for Arsenal and went to Watford. And I played with him at Rotherham United. And honestly, I've never really, very few players I played with were as technically capable as Paolo Vernazza was. And he was the best player in training every single day. And he couldn't get in the team. And when he did, he just didn't have the same effect. And he's since admitted that he felt the pressure more from playing in front of fans and playing in. And also, if he lost confidence, then that would be a kind of a bit of a cycle. a downward spiral for him. So it's undoubtedly there are players that feel that way. So it could be interesting. I mean, these are all, majority of them are seasoned professionals in the Premier League, and I can't see, you know, there might be the odd young player who gets an opportunity that we don't, it'd be hard to sort of pinpoint just now. Looking at it before, if I was to pick any team who would benefit, it would be Norwich City. Because none of their players, I think only Grant Hanley and the goalkeeper, Krul, really everyone else, this is their first taste of Premier League action. And it, you know, it's a huge, huge step up, bigger platform. And if there was one team I was to pick, I would say Norwich City could kind of throw off the shackles a little bit in these final games.
Really? So in some ways, without a crowd, they will better perform, is what you're suggesting?
Well, there's no... What we already know, and there's been studies, and we spoke about this recently, is that the home advantage is all but wiped away now. So they don't have that to go up against and when they travel away from home. And, you know, I think that they're one team that, you know, that might have been something if they're travelling to Old Trafford or they're travelling to Anfield, places like that, and they, you know, they've never played there before. Most of these players had never played at these venues, in front of these crowds in this atmosphere and on this stage. And so the opportunity now to go there and none of the surroundings and none of the sort of sensory overload that goes with it is there. So who knows? I would think that if I was to pick a team, that would be the team I would say who possibly will benefit from this.
And just to finish off on that Norwich point that you just made, they're 6 points off safety as things stand. Do you think they could get themselves out of it? And in some ways, this predicament they find themselves in, they will benefit from it as a result, obviously.
I don't know, that'd be quite a prediction. I think...
I'm just fascinated by Norwich.
Norwich have won a lot of plaudits this season. They've played good football and they've got some really good players. Someone like Todd Cantwell has been revelation in his first season. So obviously there are players who have stepped up and played very well and performed well. But I think that every other team really, if you look at Villa, have got a lot of experienced players. And every other team has really been in the Premier League for at least a few seasons now. Sheffield United are already flying high, and I was thinking about them, but I think they've done so well regardless, and actually the sort of power of having their home support at Bramall Lane could be something that they really miss out on. I mean, it's all guessing games, but I would say Norwich could do well from this.
Henry, does that surprise you, or can you understand where Gregor's coming from?
Where I completely agree with him is I just don't think you can predict anything. We don't know how teams are going to... Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it's interesting. You talk to teams like Sheffield United. Sheffield United, I mean, they sound, every one of them, completely behind the manager's decision, the fitness, everything about it. And one thing I'll say about Norwich is that I saw them at the start of the season at Anfield, and they were getting absolutely whacked. I think it was about sort of 4-0, but they kept playing their game. It was like the stage didn't actually worry them so much. And even though they were 4-0 down, they just kept playing. I think Pukki got a goal towards the end, and they kept on playing, they kept on passing. So I do think they have that belief. But maybe that's an acceptance that, you know, they probably know that they're going to go down, but they're going to go down passing their way. Plus also a lot of players in that team will get picked up and stay in the Premier League if Norwich do get relegated. But what absolutely what I can completely agree with Gregor is it's very hard to predict, you know, what mood will Liverpool be in after they've won those two games that's got them the title. Will they, some of them, immediately start thinking about next season? Manchester City, what mood will they be in? Will they, you know, because it's 25 points, it's obviously too much to make up. Will they then be saying, right, let's pace ourselves and let's focus on the Champions League? So, look, there's so many variables, and I'm sure they will be dissected by supporters and us journalists, you know, in the next sort of fortnight leading up to it. But, I mean, maybe you'll have like in Germany, and you've had Bayern Munich sort of just carrying on like their amazing machine, and that will carry on. But I'm absolutely fascinated, and I'm just praying the office don't ask me to write a preview to who's going to do well and who's going to do badly, because I have not got a clue.
Well, back on to Grealish then. He says that he's still yet to win his we know, of course, he's still yet to win his first England cap, but says it's never far from his mind. 1,000,000%, he says. There were times when I was playing in the Championship, it looked quite far away, but I've always believed in myself and knew that once I was back playing in the Premier League and to the best of my ability, I would get my chance, hopefully. Now, we've spoken about his off-field behaviour. Couple that with his maverick style on the pitch. Does that make him more or less of an appeal, Henry, do you think, to Gareth Southgate?
Well, I think Gregor touched on this earlier. In fact, so where does he necessarily fit in if it's going to be him and Maddison? Henderson's going to be in there. Dele Alli's going to be in there. Gareth Southgate loves Declan Rice. So it's a central midfield three. And, you know, there's Mason Mount, you know, ahead of them. I mean, it's interesting where you see Jack Grealish's best position is. I mean, Maddison, obviously, I think thrives best centrally. Jack Grealish, 10, he loves that idea of being the sort of, you know, the central string puller. But actually, some of the best games I've seen him play for Villa, particularly at Villa Park, is cutting in off the left. He makes a very interesting point that John McGinn coming back will take a lot of the opposition's focus away from him because McGinn's such a sort of talented, creative fulcrum. I think he can... I think there are people ahead of him. I think it's fair to say Phil Foden as well, slightly different player, but he will come in there. So, I mean, the good thing from England's perspective is that they've got options in central midfield, but it's not completely right yet. And never rule out Dele Alli because Gareth Southgate does like him in that position almost as an eight.
Well, Grealish has been discussing the idea of partnering James Maddison. I know you brought this one up already, Gregor. He says, me and Madders have said so many times we think we could definitely play together. I think we'd be brilliant together, he says. Hopefully in the future that can happen. Now, obviously, we all know that you're Scottish, Gregor. but does the idea, forget you're Scottish right now, but the idea of Grealish and Maddison together, does that sound... but does it sound like an exciting opportunity for Gareth Southgate?
I don't think it's likely. I think, you know, if Grealish was to play wide, then potentially Maddison central. But I don't think the two of them in the same kind of three in midfield is likely to happen. And as I say, partly that's to do with who would partner them with. Some partly that's to do with Henderson being guaranteed a place. And I think, you know, he is looking for some... But either then, is Henderson going to be the deep line midfielder or someone who's allowed to kind of roam forward a little bit more? Southgate's a big fan of Harry Winks. As Henry said, Declan Rice. So there's a lot of competition. And then when you look at the competition on the wing for Grealish, then with Jadon Sancho and Rashford and Sterling, I mean... Yeah, as I've said many times in this podcast, it's a little bit worrying how good a squad England have now, and and that you can't even guarantee a place in the squad for Grealish and Maddison is kind of says that emphatically.
Well, we'll see then what happens with Jack Grealish and whether or not he gets that opportunity for England. That is it for now. Many thanks to Gregor and to Henry as well. Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet. It's just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. All you have to do is search The Times subscription for more information. We will be back with you on Monday for the latest game podcast. Enjoy your weekend and stay safe.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.